Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app, and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service.
Big round of applause for the mother of three over here. Just a bunch of the Thank you so much for coming along. Tell your friends. See you later, Lauren. Yeah. Moon Man Lawrence Mooney, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, yeah, we'll be in touch. It's Dave O'Neill here on The Debrief, and I'm with Lawrence Mooney. What is this car we're driving in?
We are cutting our way from Lawn back to Melbourne in a 1971 MGB GT.
What year is this?
1971.
1971, you said that, sorry.
So it's a hard top with a fast back.
Yeah, it's weird because it looks quite small, but it's quite roomy on the inside.
Yeah, so once you've squeezed yourself in, legroom stretches right to the firewall of the engine, and there's plenty of it. So you kind of, if you imagine sitting in one of those little beach seats on the beach, that's what it's like. You got the seat, and then you can stretch your legs right out in front of you.
It's got a great sound. Just listen to that purr.
Yeah, so that's a twin carburetor on an 1800 engine.
Is that what?
Very British.
How many cylinders is it?
That's four cylinders.
It's only four cylinders?
Yeah. Well, it's only a little car, so with two people in it, it's still got plenty to go.
Can you get in the back, or...?
Well, there's what they call a little dicky seat in the back.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's actually illegal because they haven't got restraints back there. So it's only licensed as a two-seater.
So you can have a dog in there, maybe, or something?
You can have a dog in there. You can have, you know, your overnight bag as you go away with your wife, lover, friend, or in this case, respected peer after
a great gig at the
here comes a bus the Lawn via Torquay bus just passed it.
We're on the Great Ocean Road, which is one of the greatest. It's about 11 o'clock at night, though. We've just done a gig at the Lawn Hotel,
and this car is gobbling up every bend and curve
of the Great Ocean Road.
Yeah,
but you know what, I don't want to sound, but I could die by your side tonight. It could be like a bit of a James Dean-y spider.
That's right. Well, it'll be recorded.
Yes.
And what a phenomenal episode it'll be.
Of The Debrief, yes.
The Debrief, just shortly before Dave O'Neill and the Moon Man got decapitated under the Torquay bus.
Because, you know, I remember talking to the guy from Living End, Chris. Lead singer. Chris?
Yeah, Chris.
He had a bad accident here on the Great Ocean Road.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, so he was coming around the corner.
From Falls or something?
No, he was going to a barbecue with his wife, and he had sausages and beer. And he's of course, because he's in the Living End, he had an old-fashioned car, not unlike this one, but it was like it might have been an XP wagon, like an old Ford, or an old Holden maybe. And a tourist came on the wrong side of the road in a big four-wheel drive.
Right.
And he went over the side.
Wow.
Of the Great Ocean Road, and his car flipped. And he said all he could remember was smelling was beer and sausages. And he broke his leg.
Yeah, there's signs all along here that say drive on the left-hand side of the road.
Yeah, and he's...
Occasionally somebody from Europe or America must just go, I forget.
Yeah, but his wife walked away and just walked up to the road and flagged someone down. But yeah, that was terrible.
Do you reckon it's a good way to go when your last aroma is beer and sausages? Is it a comforting thing? I deserve better than this.
Yeah, exactly. Normally be petrol, probably.
Smelling petrol would be horrible. I've read Robert Hughes's book, Things I've Learned.
Right.
Things I Didn't Know. Anyway, his memoir, and it starts with that horrific car accident that he had in WA.
Oh, the artist guy. Robert Hughes.
Yeah, the
critique kind of guy. Yeah.
Yeah, not the star of Hey Dad.
He's not dead yet.
He's not dead.
No.
But no, Robert Hughes.
Yeah, I know who you mean. He did that TV show, yeah, for a while on the ABC.
Yeah, and it's an amazing read, but he writes about being stuck in the car and just smelling petrol and just it was his greatest fear, just waiting to be incinerated.
Oh, it'd be terrible.
Oh, awful.
It'd be absolutely awful. I used to live across the road from this guy who, he was like an artist from that time, and he said, I was talking about Robert Hughes. Robert Hughes? Yeah. And he said, me and Barry Dickens, you should say people's first names, expecting you to know. Barry. Me and Barry went to one of his talks at the gallery. Anyway, we'd had a few drinks, and I said to Barry, fuck this, let's get out of here. So we got up, but bloody Barry knocked over Robert's slide projector on the way out. And it crashed to the ground. And I said, well, when was this? And he goes, like, thinking it was last week, 1974? It's like...
Right.
One of these people that talks... Yeah. Anyway, Robert Hughes. Is he still alive?
No, he passed away. But he's written some amazing books, you know, The Culture of Complaint.
This is the thing about you, Lawrence Mooney, is that you have that... You definitely have a blue-collar, working-class appeal, but you also have that intellectual level to you. But you never went to uni. Is that right?
No.
So you're self-educated.
Declan Fogg says that it's referred to as being an autodidact.
Is that what it's called?
Like Keating, yeah.
Keating didn't go to uni.
You educated yourself.
But you went to... I know you went to Wyfrides, because I went to Mitcham High, which is the school closest. Wyfrides was where all my mates from Scouts went.
Right.
And you were... I think you were the same year as me.
Yeah, so the year of 82.
Yeah, HSC in 82.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you would have known Evan Ong and Andre Elhay. I think they're the year below us.
Oh, yeah.
Evan and Ong.
Daniel Elhay was in my...
Elhay, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Daniel had a hard time at school, but then he became quite funky after school. And
yeah, he's a bit of a bohemian.
Yeah, he got into kind of like a bit of New Age philosophy and Zen. That kind of stuff.
Well, I was in a band with Andre, so we were half Mitcham High, half Wyfrides. So, because I remember I met you at a party in Dalesford, and you'd either just started comedy or were just about to start comedy.
Well, I think I was in my final year at drama school, the National
with Felicity,
Theatre Drama School.
Who my partner worked with in the
Felicity
body shop.
Manager,
Felicity Menadue.
Her brother just recently died.
Yeah, I heard. It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, and he wasn't old.
No, he wasn't old at all.
Yeah, and so I still see some of the people from drama school. And, you know, well.
Because I met you at a party in Dalesford at...
And I was a bit of a fanboy because I listened to Triple R.
That's right.
And on Sundays you had your show Otto Bucco with Vic Plume.
The Great Vic Plume, yeah.
The Great Vic Plume, who is just a legendary character in Melbourne comedy. But also, I've run into him in places like Nudgee, going to the Nudgee pub.
Oh, the Nudgee pub?
Nudgee, yeah.
Yeah.
And, there's logging areas in South Gippsland.
Yeah, Vic
and
turn
he just
up.
Emerges
yes.
from the bush. And you go, what have you been doing, Vic? And he goes, I've just been bush. And he means I've just been bush.
Oh yeah, Vic. Yeah. He'll go off grid.
Yeah.
He'll go off grid. I think he moved to Queensland.
So how did you guys come together to do Otto Bucco?
Well, we just met on the stand-up circuit. So
right.
I reckon I met him at my second gig. And I was always attracted to those more, I don't know, those knockabout, again, it's a blue collar kind of thing. And we used to hang out, and him and Alan Parks. But I mean, that generation of comics, we started in 1990, so you would have started about 92 or 3.
94.
94, yeah.
94 was my first time I stood up, and then ESPY Comedy was January 95. But there's something about those guys coming from that kind of like those working class suburbs,
yes.
Yeah, wanting to glorify the working class as like they're all honest and they're all, you know, geniuses. You know, it's got its assholes as well.
Of course,
there's some integrity there that's inherent and that you can identify with.
Yeah. It's interesting. It is interesting, isn't it? Because they just reminded me of guys I went to school with. And we got on really well. But all that generation of my generation from 1990 to 94, a lot of them weren't successful. You know what I mean? And then the next generation, 5 or 6 years on, like you, like Husey, Rove, Hallier, all those, there was a lot of those guys that got successful.
Well, I've...
But there was barely none from my era that are still left.
In podcasts and interviews, I've described them as, you know, the first comedy millionaires. And yes. Will Anderson said, how do you know I'm a millionaire? Well, my mum heard you refer to me as a millionaire and said, are you a millionaire, Will? And yeah, I said, well, come on. I've done the maths.
Yes.
And, yeah, but you that's... know, Hughesy and Rose and Will, I mean, that's when the money really became big. And
yeah,
I think that that generation also flourished through the Melbourne International Comedy Festival and then attracted a lot of younger people to comedy because they saw a kind of a career pathway.
Yeah. Because when I started, seriously, comedy was made up of people who had no other choice and had tried a lot of things and went, oh, I'll just do comedy. I can't work in an office or on a building site. So there was a lot of that going on. And then, yeah, it seemed to get a bit more professional 5 or 6 years later.
And also, comedy has always attracted, you know, fringe dwellers and nut jobs and very idiosyncratic people, and, you know, people who have used
substances
yeah, and used comedy to support their habits.
Yeah.
Oh, but then all of a sudden, all of that changed with, you know, all these lucrative electronic media contracts.
Yeah, that's true.
Big radio contracts and TV and stuff, and then you started to get these careerists in comedy, and there wasn't so much slack-jawing and smoking joints before you went on.
No.
People were really working up material and became quite serious about it.
Yeah, it's true. And I noticed over the years people came from more affluent backgrounds.
Yeah,
so you say to a lot of the younger comics these days, what school did you go to? And I reckon back in our day it would have been Ringwood Tech, you know, whatever. Now, or it's Catholic school. There are a lot of Catholics like yourself and Yuzi that went to schools that were just the average Catholic boys' Catholic school. Now it's like, oh, I went to this grammar school or that grammar school. Because I think those kids, back in my era, their parents would have really come down hard on them if they said, I want to be a comedian. They're like, well, we spent all this money on you.
Yeah, there's definitely...
But nowadays they go, oh, you're going to be a comedian? Oh, well, you're going to be you're going to be a millionaire. Off you go.
Yeah, there's a few more law degrees floating around now.
Yeah, what I always say, people go, oh, there's a lot of lawyers that are comedians. I go, a lot of the comedians are either, the lawyers are the ones from the richer backgrounds, the ones from the poorer backgrounds, a lot of us are ex-teachers. Because that's what you did if you were slightly creative and you're from a more working class background, you did teaching. Like Denise Scott, Damien Callinan, Glenn Robbins, Mark Mitchell. There's a lot of ex-teachers around, Paul Collegia.
There's some interesting Venn diagrams in comedy because there's also a lot of us are the baby in the family.
Yeah, oh no, definitely the youngest. Yeah, I've talked about that before.
Yeah.
I read a book about that. This guy talks about it in a book that I read. And he said, yeah, he'd studied, like, you're the youngest of four, are you?
I'm the youngest of three.
Three, so I'm the youngest, but I'm a twin, but we're the youngest of four boys. And Hughes is the youngest of five. Frank Woodley's the youngest of nine.
Damien Callan's the youngest of five, I think.
Yeah.
Emily Tahini's the youngest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But see that... Yeah, because that's...
Alan Brough's the youngest.
Oh, there's a lot of youngest.
Yeah, and my theory is that you're born with an audience and your mother goes, watch what he's doing, watch what he's doing, and your older siblings are like, oh, my God, we've got to watch this shit.
Yeah, well, I see it with my three kids, the youngest... He'll come out and he'll put a pot on his head and his older brother and sister will laugh at him, often in a nasty way, but he just goes, oh, I don't care, it's a laugh.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, oh, it's a laugh, well, whatever.
Oh, yeah, you don't mind being an idiot.
Oh, no. No, I remember some guy interviewed me. There used to be a guy in Geelong who would put comments on your Wikipedia page and then he'd interview you for one of the papers.
What?
He was like he's like a troll. And he would do... No, he used to run that website. I can't remember what it was called. And... Tumbleweeds?
Oh, you know the... Do you know the guy behind Tumbleweeds?
Yeah, I know his name. Yeah, I know. Because...
I think that his...
He's from Geelong.
His site is some of the best media criticism in the country.
I know, but see, what... Why doesn't he put his name on it?
Yeah.
Why is he scared of losing his job with a big issue?
That's when you say losing his job as a seller?
No, he writes for The Big Issue. He writes for The Big Issue. But he also would report, he's a Geelong guy, and he would report on Geelong stuff. But I'm sure, he interviewed me once for the Geelong Times or something, and it said on my Wikipedia page, Dave O'Neill is a professional comedian, idiot, And now, because he did it to one of my other friends, and then he asked you the question. He goes, oh, on your Wikipedia page, it describes you as an idiot. How do you feel about that? I said to him,
you can't do that.
Well, I said to him,
that's unethical.
Yeah, I know. I said to him, mate, if I was a brain surgeon, I wouldn't like to be described as an idiot. Because I'm a comedian, I don't mind being called an idiot.
Yeah.
Because you kind of are like a professional idiot. So you go along to a big function, they have all serious speeches, and then you get up and you take the piss out of them. That's what an idiot does.
Well, yeah, I think the role of the jester or idiot or fool or whatever you want to call it is exactly what we're meant to do. We're meant to, you know, prick all those balloons of pomposity and formality. Yeah. And I love doing that, you know, if I've got an awards night thing.
Yeah, you were telling me your strategy.
You know, but also just to subvert the whole thing. That's what people
definitely
want.
Definitely, definitely.
I'm not hard to be a stiff shirt.
Oh, yeah, and also, we walk into those situations and I go, I'm never going to see these people ever again.
No.
And I always listen to the guy before me. Often I've sat through, you know, we have to sit through the CEO speech, or the guy from marketing gets up and makes a speech. And yeah. I always go, thanks to Gary for his speech. It wasn't very funny, was it, guy? I've had better support acts, but anyway.
Yeah. But also, you watch those guys do those speeches and all those people in that room. And without, you know, condescending, I just think, I'm so glad I'm not them. I'm glad I picked the path that I'm doing.
Yeah. But don't you love it when you go...
a lot of freedom.
Because we often call, I think, and you're very good at it, is that you just call the situation. Like, I went to an awards night the other night, there was a guy in a T-shirt... And I just said, "What?" And they're all in suits. What's the story with Gary and his T-shirt, everyone? Which is, everyone just loses their mind because they're all thinking it. Why has he turned up in a T-shirt and got up and accepted an award?
I always ask, where's the human resources department?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know...
Everyone hates HR.
Everyone hates HR, but also the workplace has become a lot more... heavily policed, and you know, for good reason, and sexual harassment is
Look at that Channel 7 case at the moment in Adelaide with a HR person saying, oh, you can leave the room now, to the senior journalist.
I know.
That's terrible.
But so I always go, you know, where's the HR department? And then just like, look at you, a bunch of sexual deviants, and essentially I'm sexually harassing them in their own workplace. So they'd have if they had a problem with it, they'd have to report it to themselves.
Yeah, go fill out a form about yourself.
I was going, ooh, you all fucking love it, don't you? Look at you, you bunch of sex maniacs. And you can see the rest of the people just like, what are you doing?
I love it.
And, of course, the HR department love it because they are all deviants to a man and a woman.
That's
why you get into human resources.
Who would get into HR? It's a very weird...
My mum was the human resources manager at Adidas. She started off as the personnel manager, which essentially
That's the old term for HR,
which
isn't
was
it?
Organising the pays. And, you know, when someone was hired, or if there was a position advertised, you would basically sort through to a short list until the executive sat down and interviewed them.
Yeah, right.
So then it became human resources. You know, the name change had to attend the university degree that was designed for it.
Ah, okay. So you can do a degree in human resources now?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you can.
Yeah, you can't be...
Just an arts
graduate. You can't just wander in there unlettered anymore. You're dealing with people, Dave.
Yes. And their issues.
And their issues and their proclivities and their needs and their wants. Imagine if comedy had a human resources department.
Imagine that. There'd be so many issues, so many forms being filled out.
I know, but also how much...
Harassment.
How much harassment and wrong...
Pay disputes.
Oh.
He got that gig that I wanted and he offered... He went in for less money than me.
Yeah.
I auditioned for that TV show. He got it. She got it. I didn't.
Yeah, there can never be an award in comedy, you know.
No. No, exactly.
This person deserves this.
Oh my God, we're in Anglesey.
That was a good gig in the lawn tonight.
Yeah, it was excellent. You were very good in the pub. They love it because it's, and they're all sort of from. I was talking to people from Sydney there.
The people from Ballarat. There was a huge football trip. 60
girls
from St Mary's Football Club in Glen Iris.
Yeah, and they wanted us to go and sing karaoke with them.
Yeah, and we both declined because not all of the women would know who we were.
Yes.
You know, in their early and mid-20s.
Yeah.
And so there's two 52-year-old guys clumping around a dance floor amongst all these young women. It just looks
Singing some John Farnham song or something. Yeah. Just going to go, who are these guys? Who brought their dad?
Yeah.
Do you guys need to pick someone up, like in their station wagon? Not pick up, like drive them home?
But also younger men, and I think that it's completely appropriate,
they
become instinctively protective of women when they see older men just kind of on the scene.
They would resent us.
Yeah, they kind of resent us and suspect us of, you know, poor motives.
And some of the girls actually came to the comedy show and they said, one of them was saying to me, I said to the girls downstairs, it's Dave O'Neill, you know, from The Nugget. And they didn't know what I was talking about. I said, well, The Nugget was a movie 10 years ago. And she goes, oh, it's longer than that. I had to think about it. It was 15 years ago.
Plus, you're Dave O'Neill from Takeaway.
I was in Takeaway as well. That's right.
But I thought Takeaway struck me as a movie that the pitch idea was excellent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and that,
it's true.
That first scene.
Oh, yeah.
With that.
The invention of fish and chips.
Oh, yeah. And the man talks about the dim sim.
Oh, yeah. Francis. Was it Francis Greenslade?
Yeah. It's Francis Greenslade is the traveller, but the man behind the bar is the guy from
games. The actor.
Nicholas Bell.
Nicholas Bell, yeah, very good actor.
Yeah, like, very good
and
actor.
And Cillian Upton is the. She's a female in it, yeah.
Yeah, another excellent actress. Yeah.
She's in Wentworth, yeah.
Yeah. She was she's one of my episodes of It's a Date.
Oh,
in fact,
yeah.
She was the mother of my child in It's a Date.
That's right. What was your character called in It's a Date?
The pig.
The pig, the effing pig. Yeah, no, that was a good opening scene.
Yeah, it was tremendous. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. Because somehow it's going to be linked back to that. But that stood alone as a standalone sketch.
We wrote that, I think, afterwards. I can't remember what happened there.
And then the two takeaway stores who were competing.
Yeah, Vince Colosimo versus Stephen Curry.
Vince Colosimo versus Stephen Curry. It just lacked a little bit of fibre.
Something happened. We don't know. It tested really well, that movie. The guys at Village... This has got the best results we've ever had. It's one of those stories.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They thought it was going to go gangbusters, but it didn't. It did not. It took less than The Nugget, let me tell you. But there was that great period.
Because The Nugget is another name for a shit in Australia, I thought it was pretty brave to call your film The Nugget.
But you watch The Nugget. It was on TV the other night. I was showing my kids had never seen it. It was on Foxtel. I taped it. They were just laughing and... It's like a kid's movie. It's kind of cute.
So, who are the three protagonists? You, Eric Banner.
Stephen Curry.
And Stephen Curry again.
We find the gold nugget.
And then an adventure in shoes.
Have you been in a movie?
Yeah, I was. I've been in a
movie. Oh, yeah, you were in Bad Eggs.
Yeah, I was Wazza from the mid-afternoon Funhouse.
Yes.
And Peter Rosethorn was my...
You were in that great opening scene. That great opening scene. Wasn't the opening scene? Yeah.
Where the car goes through the shopping
center. The bongo van, yeah.
No, it's a Merc.
Oh, it's a Merc, is it?
Yeah, he dies inside his
Merc. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Mick Molloy and the cops drove the bongo van, didn't they? The little bongo van.
Bob Franklin. So I was in that, and I was also in a deleted scene from The Extra with Jim Owen.
Oh, The Extra.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Which you have to say... Jermaine kind of had the idea for Extras, the Ricky Gervais show, years before he did, but it just didn't, you know, it wasn't whatever, for whatever reason, just didn't happen, you know what I mean? But it was this very similar idea, very similar idea.
I think Channel 9 poured a lot of money into that movie off the back of the success of The Crack.
The Crack, yeah.
And it didn't do very well.
Yeah.
The Extra.
No, The Crack did really well. But there was that great period in the early 2000s where there were a lot of comedy movies. There was Cracker Jack. There was Bad Eggs.
And Cracker Jack was hugely successful.
Cracker Jack was massive.
Wog Boy can't be left out either.
Mate, $11 million.
$1 million.
Took $11 million.
I fucked the back out of them, mate.
Yeah. There was that. Yeah, that was because of Macquarie Bank was backing a lot of those movies, apparently. That's how they got up.
Do you know who I always thought could make a movie... You know, in terms of expanding a sitcom into a movie, and that's Frank and Colin.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Movie. Yeah, definitely. I had Colin on this podcast the other day. The story of the Lane and Woodley show is just tragic.
Is it Jeff Portman?
No, it was some other guy from the ABC. It's just tragic. But you know, your ex-partner, not in a lover kind of way, Damien Callinan, used to do shows. He's got a movie up. He's doing a movie about cricket. The merger is a movie. It's getting filmed in Wagga Wagga.
Oh, yeah. It's a great story.
Yeah.
About, basically emancipating asylum seekers and integrating them into a football club.
So the Aussie
it's
comedy
been
movies
that for a long time.
Yeah, the Aussie comedy movies are still happening, and that'll be coming out next year.
But he is also in a movie called Backyard Cricket.
Yeah, that's right. And they're both directed by the same person in Wagga Wagga.
Right.
Bit of an industry there. Ah, the Amarella Scout Camp. I used to go on scout camps there.
Go to a jamboree there?
No, I went to a rover moot there for rovers.
Because we were both in the scouting movement.
What troop were you in, Bayswater?
Fourth Bayswater.
No, I was first Mitchum, but...
Bayswater, red, blue and yellow. I was the patrol leader of Rizales.
Oh, you're a PL?
Yeah, PL.
No, I only made it to APL, assistant patrol leader. But that's where I first saw comics, at this rover camp. So I would have been 18.
Right.
And I remember Glenn Robbins was there, Trevor Marmalade. And we'd all be sitting outside. They had a big stage and they show up like the movie like the Blues Brothers.
Oh, I'd love to cut to that right now.
Yeah.
Trevor Marmalade and Glenn Robbins backstage and going, what are we going to do? And you sitting out the front in your khaki shorts, legs crossed. Very expectant.
Expectant of what these comics are going to do. Yeah, they would come out and do stand-up comedy.
Hilarious.
Oh, yeah. They had some good comics. Russell Gilbert. Because it was the 80s. It would have been the 80s, for sure.
And can you remember any of the gear they were doing?
Oh, Glenn Robbins did stuff about scouts. He'd actually written a bit of scouting material.
Wow.
And, Richard Stubbs, he did it. He did the camping bit. He used to do a camping bit about going to Rosebud. He did his Rosebud routine, which was...
Yeah.
And, of course, we were of that generation that we all either camped at Rosebud, just go straight along, or we knew people had camped at Rosebud.
To Geelong?
We go to Geelong. We don't go to Winchelsea. We don't want to go to Winchelsea.
We don't want to go to Winchelsea.
You don't want to go to Winchelsea. Anyway, you're listening to The Debrief here with Lawrence Mooney. I've got to do an ad, Lawrence. For the dollarshaveclub.com, it delivers high-quality razors right to your home for less than what you normally paid.
Are we taking the Geelong City Centre?
No, straight ahead. Do you shave with a blade, Lawrence?
Yes, I do.
Well, you've got to try the Dollar Shave Club.
Is this the same shaver that... what's his name?
Probably.
He used to read the news on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Norm?
Yeah, Norm MacDonald does a shaver on his TV show.
He probably does. Just go to dollarshaveclub.com and pick up a razor that works for you from their lineup of amazing blades. That's all there is to it. I've used it. Now, here's your chance to see why over 3 million members love Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get your first month of the club for as little as $5. After that, it's just a few bucks a month. So they actually deliver it. I've got one. They deliver it to your house in a little box. The shaving cream, there's a brush, there's shavers. Dollar Shave Club is so confident in the quality and the value of all their products, there's no long-term commitment or any hidden fees. There's no reason not to join. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/thedebrief. That's dollarshaveclub.com/thedebrief.
Be smooth.
Yes, be smooth. Don't grow a beard. Don't be a hipster.
And don't rasp your woman.
Yeah.
Or your man.
Be smooth. Stubble.
You're too prickly, Dad. I don't want to kiss you.
Yeah, that's true. The kids don't like it.
Yeah, kids don't like it.
Dollarshaveclub.com. Back on the debrief here with Lawrence Mooney. We're off the Great Ocean Road now. Now, Lawrence, I've got some questions to ask as part of the debrief.
Okie doke, David.
What went well and why?
Tonight. Look, I do some stuff about ageing and about,
They were a mixed crowd, actually.
They were a pretty mixed crowd. I'm in a kind of a privileged position now where people know what to expect from me.
Yeah, they know there might be a bit of shock and awe and a bit
of
insight.
There might be a bit of shock and awe, and so they almost expect it. So it's not so much shock and awe as like, oh great, he's being naughty.
Yeah, naughty, yeah. More
so,
naughty.
Yeah, and so I can revel in that, and I've always quite enjoyed it. I actually take a very high view of vulgarity. I see vulgarity as, you know, being iconoclastic, if you will.
Yeah, but you're not vulgar, though.
Yeah.
Some people do it and they're just vulgar, but you're not vulgar.
So, yeah, I like to... I like to be naughty, but also I like to have fun. So, immediately, they were a fun kind of room and they were really into it. So, as an amorphous body, they were bang up for it.
Yeah, there was a great moment where you talked about circumcision.
Yes. Yeah,
and one of the girls from the footy trip.
So I said, and I always do this by way of moving on to the next speaker. I say, so would you like me to explain circumcision to you? And this woman goes, I know what circumcision is. And I go, oh, right. So you've had your clitoral hood and your labia minora cut off, have you? And she said, no, I haven't. I said, well, let me tell you about circumcision. Because, of course, I'm mocking the idea that, you know, in the 60s,
yeah,
our mothers had us over to doctors who cut off a piece of our genitals.
Oh, we were all circumcised.
We were all circumcised because it was for hygiene. And my mum referred to it as, it was just the fashion of the time.
That's very funny. The fashion, like, yeah, like a scarf or a hat.
Yeah.
You got flares, you got a skivvy, and you got your cords.
And you got your circumcision.
And you got circumcision to go with your treads or your thongs in the summer. What didn't go well and why? Did anything not go well?
I really didn't have an end tonight. And so I end on a dark piece about
Malcolm
Turnbull being abandoned by his mother.
Yes.
And then, you know, people go, oh, and I turn around to the out is, well, I'm not a cunt for no reason.
Yes.
And everyone's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I just went, all right, we'll see you later. And do you know what? It doesn't have to... If I've had good laughs throughout the night...
Yeah, you don't need a massive...
I don't need to have them, you know, giving me a standing ovation. It's nice to put a little cap on and a full stop, but still people have had enough and they've had a good time.
How did you stumble onto the Malcolm? Was your Malcolm... Now when I hear Malcolm, I hear you. When I actually hear him, I go, is it Lawrence Moody? Because you've got similar voices, or...
I think that I was actually kind of attracted to the voice. I quite like it, and I like his kind of plummy sounds and the way he used his voice. And I'm not a natural impersonator.
You can do a very good Shane Bourne. I've heard you Shane Bourne before.
And I quite enjoy a good impersonation. I love it when somebody else does it. And I don't think that it's, you know, low art or lowbrow.
No.
It's a lot of fun. But anyway, so I was just at home aping him on Q&A, just going, well, absolutely, Tony. Well, that's what I'm talking about. And Paul goes, you've got it. And so I'd be saying, okay, Lulu, let's go to bed now. I want you to wear your sexy underwear and, you know, mucking around as
Malcolm.
Husbands do, husbands and wives do.
Yes.
Talking filth. And, you know, I just landed Malcolm and she said, well, you got to do it as stand-up. And I thought, I didn't want to yoke myself with an impersonation. Anyway, I did, and it's exploded. And Malcolm,
being great.
Malcolm gets employed as much as Lawrence gets employed.
Yeah. So do you go and do performances now?
As Malcolm.
Yeah, as Malcolm.
So I spray my hair white.
Yeah.
Wear glasses and a suit and go out. And, you know,
at least a good half an hour of Malcolm now, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I did a trial show.
Yeah.
At Fringe, as you know, because you were a guest on it. And so an evening with Malcolm Turnbull is going to be my new show for next year's festival. So Adelaide, Brisbane, Melbourne,
fantastic.
Sydney.
Fantastic.
And, you know, I'm just lining up political guests now. Bill Shorten is going to be a guest on one show. Kenny Plibersek, Penny Wong said she's interested.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. The big one, of course, would be if Malcolm Turnbull ever comes on an evening with Malcolm Turnbull and we're just sitting opposite one another, then it will just get very meta and the world will explode.
I remember, you do it a lot on Triple M, but I remember they had him on and they sort of asked him about it, but he just
Did he ignore the question, or?
Well,
and then you came on after or before him?
Yeah, I was. I was filling in for Mick, and
he was coming
in, and his people.
Oh, they asked you to leave, or?
Said we'd prefer if it was just
up here.
Here?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. We'd prefer if it was just Eddie and Luke Darcy. So they didn't want to say we want Mooney out of the studio, but they nominated who they wanted in the studio.
Right.
And
they knew.
Of course they knew, but when he arrived, his people who know who I am and that I do it, they were quite excited. They're pointing to me in the studio. And,
yeah.
And Jake Muller, who's the producer of The Hot Breakfast, said he could hear them saying, oh, there he is, there's Lawrence Mooney. So I was held in this little
holding area.
Separated from the Prime Minister. But the weird thing is, I do him on Triple M all around Australia, and at that moment, I was doing him to Adelaide on a landline. So he's talking to Melbourne, and I'm saying, well, I can see the Prime Minister in the other studio. And it's got a delicious absurdity.
So he didn't say anything to you, or you didn't cross paths at all? No,
we didn't cross paths at all. They kept me quarantined away from Malcolm.
Fair enough.
But recently on Today Extra, David Campbell and Sonia Kruger played him a clip of me doing him. And they said, you know, what about Lawrence Mooney playing you in a movie? And they played it to him. And he was smiling, and he was actually quite chuffed. And he goes, well, actually, that's a fair cop. That's pretty good. That's a fair cop. And then he went on to explain the reason why he articulates so precisely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he had a career in radio because he was a journalist before.
Oh, that's right.
He was a lawyer. And he said, when you were reporting back to a radio station, if they couldn't understand what you were saying, you lost your job.
Yeah,
he said, so when I'd go out to report, I'd be very precise in the way that I spoke.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But he also won an oratory prize at the age of 15.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he would have done debating and stuff, surely.
Yeah, the Lawrence Campbell Oratory Prize.
Oh, wow.
Now, I've done a bit of research on Malcolm. I'm quite fascinated by him.
No, he's... The story of his mother leaving him, which you mentioned, is very sad.
Yeah, it is.
Very...
But his father, Bruce, and this kind of makes me a little bit choked up, the beauty of this motivation. His father never said a bad word about her and lied to him all through his childhood so he didn't become despondent.
Oh, really?
Whenever he asked about his mother, he'd say, your mother's away working and it must be so difficult for her, Malcolm, because she loves you so much. Can you imagine how difficult it is for her? And he said that lie that Bruce gave him helped him believe that he was loved by his mother all of his life.
Wow, so sort of like in Neighbours when someone leaves and they go to Queensland.
Yeah, or when...
Working with Kylie as a mechanic in Queensland.
Yes, or when your parents put the old Labrador down and say, it's just gone to live on the farm. It's so happy. And you go, oh, is it? Can we visit it? It's like, nah.
Well, that live show you did, the trial, was fantastic. I could easily see it being a TV show too.
Do you know what? It hadn't occurred to me beforehand because I was just working on it as purely a live show. But it's got a little bit of the, you know, Dame Edna
about it.
Where because there's a heightened character there, that Malcolm can just take the piss.
Yeah.
Especially out of, you know, the other side of politics.
Oh, it'd be fantastic, but you just got to find a place to do it. I don't know if the ABC would be up for it now.
Well, I think that the ABC have just been so beaten now.
Yeah.
They're like a cowed child. They just daren't do anything. They don't know where to turn next. And I think that it seems like they're being gutted.
But as someone said, they did the Julia as PM show. You know what I mean? So why can't they have a go at the other side?
The news department, which was sacrosanct, is now being gutted. So Michelle Guthrie has got rid of Late Line. So it seems that, you know, maybe the other side of politics are getting what they want.
It's terrible. Were there any, another question, were there any obstacles, organisational obstacles in the way tonight that hindered your performance?
Look, there's a connection on the microphone. Yes. That dropped out a few times.
That was annoying.
For Nick Capron, for you.
Yes.
But then you got the cord around the fist and around the microphone to hold it tight. But it's terrible when the microphone drops out, especially halfway through a punchline.
You lose your power.
You lose your powers, yeah.
So weird.
There's actually... Sometimes you can be weirdly intimidated by something that shouldn't ordinarily intimidate you. And whilst Nick was on, so UMC, Nick was the first act. There was this large group of 21-year-old women.
Yeah, they
came into the back of the room.
Emily's 21st.
It's Emily's 21st. And Emily had this very high-pitched, manic
laugh.
But
a cackle.
Yeah, like...
But she sounded like an old woman. It was weird. I thought, I just assumed it was a woman in her 60s or 70s.
I didn't think it was an attention-getting device. I just thought she had a very weird laugh, or maybe even a little bit... Tourette's-y.
Yes.
Her friends didn't respond to it. One would look around to, you know, see if she was okay, I guess. But all of a sudden, I felt this huge generation gap, and I thought, I've got nothing to say that can entertain these women.
Well, they were laughing during you.
Yeah. The weird thing is, they'd come to see me.
Yeah.
They knew who I was, but I was psyching myself out.
Yeah, I know.
And I just became really fearful. And it's interesting that...
A room full of young people like 20, 21 can freak you out, though.
Yeah,
freaks
exactly.
Me out.
Of all the things that could freak you out...
Yeah, young people.
Like, you know, I could have a bunch of bikies in the front row. No, I wouldn't care.
Wouldn't worry
But if
me.
There's a bunch of really young people in there, I all of a sudden get that emergency teacher fear.
Yes.
It's like, oh, my God, they're going to destroy me.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because my fallback is just to hang shit on them.
Yeah.
But that's easy with young blokes, because they've all got beards and tattoos and moustaches these days. So you just do the, oh, where'd you park? You're from World War II, you blokes. And, you know, oh, there's a bush ranger turned up. But with the women, the young girls...
They could so disarm you.
Yeah, because we've both got daughters too, and you're like... Oh my God, they're about as old as our kids, these kids. Like, yeah. Oh, God.
And that's the other thing, a 21-year-old woman looks so young.
Oh, they look 15.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's going
Your
on?
Your Honour. Yeah. they look very young.
The classic Your Honour. Yeah, anyway, my case comes up next Tuesday.
Thank you, good night. Last question, how can we do better next time?
I reckon it was a pretty good night, actually.
I reckon they got value for money, and they loved it in Lawn.
And you know, I think that one of those kind of nights, one of the things that can really help you is to be seen in the room beforehand.
Oh, they love just talking to you.
We sat down, we had a counter meal, and a couple of beers, and it's like, oh, there they are. So you're not aloof, you know, you're not spirited into some green room, ready for your, you know, your huge...
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld appearance.
Yes.
I mean, you're in a pub in Lawn. Yeah. There's a couple of hundred people there. Like, sometimes I will separate myself, but it's only because I'm feeling self-conscious.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I think, you know, a great gift you can give yourself is to rub shoulders with a few people beforehand, have a bit of a chat to them, show them you're just normal, and then they're into it.
But also, you can... They'll give you some very valuable information.
Yeah, they...
So they go, make sure you hang shit on Derek, it's his birthday.
Yeah.
And if there's ever a lull in your act, you go, what about Derek's birthday, everyone? Oh, what a dickhead. And they'll go, oh, yeah, Derek.
Like the Nelson twins.
Yeah.
Whenever they go to a footy club beforehand, they just go, all right, who's got the biggest cock?
Really?
Yeah. Because there's always a guy at a footy club who's famed for his cock.
Yeah, oh, gotcha.
What's the country town
that you hate?
Where all the inbreds live.
I was in Finlay, and I said, so what town do you guys hate? And they said, jewellery. You know, jewellery.
Yeah.
And of course I said, oh, jewellery. What a shithole. And they're all like cheering. I go, didn't Ned Kelly write his manifesto from there, didn't he?
Yeah,
the jewellery letter. And I said, you know what it said? I want to get the fuck out of jewellery. They're all like, poop. Then, of course, I do a gig at Jewellery, and I hang shit on Finlay.
Yeah.
You know what Ned Kelly wrote in the Geraldry letter? Everyone from Finley's a fucking idiot.
Oh, they love it. All right, well, we got to wind it up here.
All right. But
we can play a song, because we play a song at the end of the podcast. Not us together. We drop it in, man. So what? Because we're the same generation, we should get a band that we both like.
Do you know what song I've been going around in my head?
Yeah?
Rebecca's Empire.
Oh, great band. Is she also rude or no?
No. Give me a sign now. Give me a sign.
Oh, yes.
I'm empty.
That's a great song.
Yeah, and I tell you what.
I used to see her down the shops. Yeah.
She is.
When I lived in the.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I got to know her through the Mirabelle Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
So back in the 90s, when she was the lead singer of Rebecca's Empire, it's like, wouldn't I? Rebecca Barnard. Oh, my God.
I used to see.
Sexy, gorgeous, and an amazing singer.
Oh, yeah. And,
and still is, if you're listening, Beck.
Oh, yeah.
Rebecca Barnard.
Rebecca Barnard. She was in a band called The Escalators. And they used to support ska bands. They sort of moved, and she was still at school, she was telling me. So I remember seeing her. She was the lead singer in this band. But then, of course, Rebecca's Empire had that great album with Shane O'Mara.
Her partner.
On guitar.
And the father of a child.
Yes. Henry. Henry?
Yeah, Henry.
He must be 25 by now.
He's a sweet kid.
He's a drummer, isn't he? He plays drums. Ah, look, let's play some Rebecca's Empire. Here we go. Thanks, Lawrence.
It's a pleasure, Dave.
And you can catch Lawrence all around Australia doing shows. You can follow him on Twitter, etc.
And check out The Real Malcolm Turnbull on YouTube, because we've started to put up little clips.
Fantastic. Google that.